Please.
Thanks.
Well, the last two presentations made my job much easier. What we're going to do in this presentation is a proposal, basically, built on what we have been doing. Early this year, Clyde and I met in China on a WMO, World Meteorological Organization-sponsored climate risk management meeting. And there, we are sharing about our activities, which we are doing from Australia, lead agency, but I'll show you in a minute where else we are involved. And then, as you have heard the last presentations of the Brazil and Clyde, he's originally from Brazil, as I gather. So we said that, well, why not go beyond the Asia-Pacific network. What we have been doing the last 4 years, I'm basically an agronomist, agroclimatologist, and use climate information from basically crop production, natural resource management point of view. But only the last 3-4 years, our interest was to be more relevant to our farmers, bring just the disease and pest component as well with the agronomy broad production areas. There are some efforts, as you have seen in the past presentations, but it's not obvious. Many of the models that you have seen are still depends on who are driving that model, where it's coming from. So the project that we are leading from University of Western Sydney, Australia, has been funded by Asia-Pacific Network for Global Change Research, APN. And in that proposal, one of their objective, as I understand, two or three folds. One is a good research. Two, capacity building and developing dialogue or network between developed and developing countries. And in that process, as a requirement of the APN funding, we need to have at least two developing nations. And well, when I say two developing nations, at least we said India, though it is a developed country for many purposes, but in the APN system, it's still a developing country, Bangladesh and Cambodia. Now, and from the developed world, Australia, and I'm based in the University of Western Sydney. We've got colleagues from Queensland and Victoria. And from the US, Florida, Ken Booty has been a collaborator for the last few years on this particular project. And Jim Hansen from Columbia University, and J.D. Hatfield from National Salty Laboratory, Iowa. Now, this has been, research has been going on, as I say, since 2006, supported by not only APN, but WMO, and the participating institutions, and ACIR from Australia. Now, as I said, one of the things this funding body wants to develop the connections. So we had the first meeting of this project 2006 in Hyderabad, India, where all the participants, about 25 from all these countries, participated. And in 2008, we had a meeting in Bangladesh. One of the things we're trying to do, the connecting India and Bangladesh in this region, India has a very well-developed agrometeorological network and services. So we're trying, with some limited success, how do we build that network and strengthen their activities through the crop disease risk management? This is the focus of this project. Now, similarly, in 10 days' time, we will meet in Phnom Penh, Cambodia, again supported by not only APN, but AusAid from Australia, ACIR, and Crawford Fund, to look into the future and capacity building. In this process, what we are doing, like we did here, India and Bangladesh, similarly here, We're trying to invite people from the region like Vietnam and Thailand and Laos, Indonesia, and so we'll discuss that. Now, while we're doing this, Clyde and I discussed and said whether or not we can go beyond the Asia-Pacific networks, and Brazil came along. And I never visited Brazil. I always wanted to be there because while I was working in ECROSAT, and EMBRAPA and ECROSAT worked for many years and many projects, contributions. So here is an opportunity for us to look at the options and what we can do. So I think this is a very common goal that building on from APN, building on what we just listened from Dr. Hoban's work and Clyde's presentation, what we are trying to do is integrate agrometeorological models, risk analysis, crop disease impact, and more importantly, this one. Once the community interaction is just not only the farmers, but also other decision makers and policy makers. And as I mentioned in our previous work, we did include those people, and we are trying to, we are taking our information to the farmers. I'll show you in a minute, on the, towards the end, about how we do it. When you started in 2006, we thought it was very timely, just not because of the climate change, people are growing importance, but the climate variability impact, and how could we build the relationships, test the models, and connect the agronomy and plant protection disciplines. It's not an easy task, and I'm still finding it very hard to connect. And the idea was to better forewarning of crop disease occurrence and the advisory systems. And we have a similar goal for this project. And as I mentioned, from the, my collaborators is Professor Clyde Frazee from University of Florida and Emerson De La Ponte from UFRGS. And I'm from the University of Western Sydney. Now, these three nations, particularly those three locations, as you mentioned, in addition to that, we have common interest of studying the climate and risk management, agricultural risk management. For this particular paper is crop disease. El Nino, as you have heard from the last two presentations, are very common, and it's also in Australian context. The last 3 years has been El Nino identified, and more El Nino-like main conditions may prevail in the future. Now, you just see the last few years, 91, 92, 92, 93, 4, 95, 97, 98, 2002, 3, 2004, 2005. Almost every other year has been El Nino, including this year. Now, what we are trying to do is, while much of the work that's going on the particular disease and pest monitoring, whether or not we could do some better forecasting. Now, what sorts of tools and signals that we could use? Now, ENSO is one. We have done similar thing with the ACF-funded project in India and Australia with some limited success. Always question being asked about the accuracy of that forecast using ENSO and reliability and how well in advance can those tools be used. But we want to give it a go again in this Australia, US, and Brazil collaborations. And of course, the temperature change, let's say the climate change with 1 degree centigrade temperature, has a huge impact, just not only the crop phenology, but also the pest populations and pest dynamics. How could we build that in? And the third point is, again, was mentioned all the three presentations before, future climate scenario projections. Now, as I understand from Florida, you've been trying to develop something here with the NASA. Similarly, in Australia, I've been working with University of New South Wales colleagues about the downscaling of climate change future scenarios, which model to use, is this dynamic simulation model and all that. And but then, not only that downscaling thing, but most important point for us in this disease thing is about the challenge, the leaf wetness, and the time scale. Now, if you want to generate that every hourly leaf wetness and the projection scenario for the future, it's a great challenge, and we need to think about it, and we want to address those issues over the time. And this project hopefully will give us some platform to interact with other people to do this. So this is next few slides, a contribution from my colleague, the Clyde, from Australian context, US, the seasonal climate in ENSO, and you have seen that presentation last few slides. And the, okay. So just want to present that what you have seen, but this particular slide was not shown that in a way. The seasonal climate variations in the Southeast are largely driven by El Nino. Look at the winter months and the precipitation increase. Right? That's the only thing I want to highlight the from this particular slide. In the Florida's case. Now, in the winter months, again, this slide came from Flag. The tomato yields in the El Nino was reduced, and it's possibly because of low daytime temperature and solar radiation and increased rainfall, and that leads to high disease pressure in the El Nino years. And you can see the neutral years, it just it could be the variability between different El Nino neutral years, right? So one of the key, we think that this kind of key, like El Nino, can be used to have a better forewarning of the disease systems. So the point, the conclusion was the ENSO influences winter crop yields and prices. And there has been a paper by Jim Hansen and the group on this a few years ago. And El Nino winters are cooler and wetter, causing reduced yields and increased disease pressure. And El Nino winters require, on average, more fungicide applications then, and that has huge implications. Now, this is my colleague from EFRGS, Emerson, and from some one example case study. And you have seen a few slides from previous presentations. Now, all we are showing here, this data that soybean rust exceeds $2 billion of losses. Now, yield impact is variable due to climate variability, especially in southern Brazil. And what he has been doing over there is analyzed data for from 79 to 2004, where he has the daily precipitation information and the soybean areas. And then this model, very simple, I think, it uses rainfall data for 30 days following the first detection of the disease. And we use three planting dates, January 15, February 1, and February 15. And then we use the rainfall data from after 30 days after those dates and averaged over three planting dates, and the severity index is being calculated. Now the point Emerson wants to give here or convey that in his case as well, the disease severity index is related to El Nino. And these are the El Nino years. And so there is a possibility, or there is indication, good indications that El Nino can be linked with the disease severity in the Brazil conditions. This is the comment that the conclusion is affected by ENSO at some locations higher during El Nino. Now, this is one of the framework slides that came from our group, the APN activities that I mentioned, and very similar to what has been presented, but in different formats. Just quickly, if I go, what we were doing is just not only historical climate data, which we all use for most of the models, but also use the change scenarios for the next 10 years, 20 years, and 30 years, and use the some sort of forecast information, including ENSO. And most importantly, for any of these work, the relationship between microclimate and main station data. We do know that there's a large variation, particularly if you want to predict the disease situation in the field, we need to get exact the microclimate information from the field, just not from the meteorological observatory. But in the absence of, we do know when you are working with the developing countries, it's very difficult sometimes to get a good data sets, even from the Met Station data sets, reliable and accurate. But then the relationship between Met Station and microclimate data in the absence of measured microclimate data in the plants, environment, and disease sections. Now then, we link into the, ultimately want to take this information to the advisory system. And this is working in Indian context, for example. I had some good slides, I'm not going to show it to here. And, but the Brazil situation, there are some slides shown. So we'd like to get that bit and integrate together the risk analysis model and take it to the advisory system, to the end users. And the tools, again, that you're talking about as mobile phones is a very useful resource. And can that be used to apply in the making better decisions, better connections, better communications? And we also like to bring all these other economic inputs, market and government sources, information to the whole modeling approach in the risk management and decision-making models. And just would like to give some recognition, as I mentioned before, of all the universities involved and the APN, ACIR, and some of the funding agencies, including some of my colleagues in India. Thank you very much.
Questions now. I'd like to open for questions for any of the previous speakers as well. If you have questions for the previous speakers, please.
I really believe that this approach of combining monitoring and seasonal forecasting is really interesting, and now bringing the climate change contest. But I have a story to share. When I first were looking at this disease pressure for the strawberries, and we did this simulation with taking into account the El Nino phases, and I found out, well, interestingly, what's the probability of applying more or less fungicide when you have an El Nino, La Nina? I went to share that with a farmer that works with me. And I was very excited, and I said, well, look what I found, and you can now look at your probability of applying different number of applications or so. And he was saying, yeah, that's interesting. And I said, well, you're not happy with that. I said, no, I'm not sure what can I do with this. And I was sort of disappointed for a while. And I said, well, let's keep talking about this, and can't you buy more fungicide before the season or lower prices? Not really. We buy as we go. And only by the end of this meeting, he came to me and said, well, I have an idea that I think is going to work now. I always plant part of my strawberries are with a variety which is very accepted by the market, but it's very susceptible to diseases. So with this information now, I'm going to change the allocation to this variety. I'm going to decrease during El Nino years and increase during La Nina years. So we're very happy. So we finally found a good application for this seasonal forecasting. And I believe the challenge all the time is to we have this nice forecasting. We have a tremendous advance in the climate science. But the challenge is, how do you make this information useful, and that they can make a decision based on this information? That's the real challenge. Jim, please.
Since you have some time for questions, I thought